this week's edition of Damn Art Majors. That's Tourette's Aaron. I'm with Giggling Dutters.
Hey, I don't giggle.
You were just giggling.
I barrel laugh. It's like a barrel.
You were just giggling. Quite giddy.
Sorry, fine, I was giggling.
And I am your host, Adam, taking over the reins once again for I Won the Last Game.
And I got fired.
And you got fired. Well, yeah, kind of.
Apparently,
happens when you show up too late, 2 hours late to work.
I had things to do.
What things?
Things.
Anyway, we're going to start this episode like we like to start every episode with what you drinking. So let's go around and what you got there, Dutters?
I have a Foothills Brewery Torch Pilsner.
How is it?
It's banging.
Banging?
It's just kind of the first word, descriptive word that came into my mind.
It's a good word. I like it. Let's go with that. Aaron, what do you got?
Better than bra.
I'm drinking a beer by one of my favorite brewers called Weinstefina.
That sounds Nazi-ish.
It's a really long name. It's not Nazi-ish.
How do you spell that?
Hydra.
It's spelled Weinstephaner.
Fascinating.
It's a Weizenbach, and it's called Vitas, which I assume it's a dark Weizenbach, but it's absolutely amazing and delicious and good, and you can find it at your local Not Harris Teeter.
Your local bottle shop.
Yeah.
Food
of specialty beers.
That brings me to mine, which is Molson Golden. I went Canadian.
Hey.
It literally tastes like the Canadian Yingling. It looks like Yingling. It feels like Yingling, smells like Yingling, but it's Canadian. So far, it's not so bad.
Canadian.
Yeah. I'm trying to diversify my Untappd app. Have you heard of the Untappd app?
Yes.
Yeah, no, I've got it on my phone. I just never use the damn thing.
You should try it out. It's a lot of fun. I know.
The problem is I always forget. And then it tells me I need to slow down.
Well, I mean, the app tells you that. We tell you that. Your parents tell you that. The police officer tells you that.
Pretty much the only people not telling you that is the beard.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it's the only person he listens to. Anyway, so...
Yeah, I stepped on a scale the other day, and I am still the same weight I was when I graduated college.
That's something to be proud of.
But you're still listening to the loudest voice in the crowd, the beer.
Anyway, so Aaron, I heard you got some plugs, so what are we plugging?
I do have a plug. My plug is in reference to a local artist. He lives in Raleigh. His name is Brandon Cordry. He's a fellow ECU alumni. He and I went through the painting and drawing department together. But he's obviously he's a painter and illustrator, and he has a new exhibition called Processor. The opening reception is in Raleigh on April 17th from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. at a gallery called Gallery A. Once again, it's in Raleigh. I was told to disregard the fact that it's a dentist's office. Your turn.
So come on out. And take in some fine local art, and while you're there, get your teeth whitened.
Or capped.
Or capped, or, check for cavities.
You can ask for Denzel Washington. And
what does that mean?
You've never seen his teeth. It's like a friggin' Hollywood sign.
Is it?
Yeah.
Is that bad? I think of Steve Harvey. That dude's got some chompers.
Yeah, they're not real.
They can't be real. There's no way. They look like fucking chiclets.
Mm-hmm. He probably harvested
like jumbo-sized chiclets under a mustache. It's ridiculous.
He actually looks like what I would assume a brontosaur looks like.
You know, they were talking about him.
There is no such thing as a brontosaurus.
Brontosaur.
Ooh, I got some Jurassic Park factoids I learned. Anybody interested? Yeah. Okay, so...
Life will find a way.
Life will find a way. According to Neil deGrasse Tyson, life will find a way only one-third of the time. Because look at all the animals and species that are extinct. He says life will find a way one-third of the time. Second, the...
That's a dark note.
The branch that Lex and Tim feed the brontosaurus.
Uh-huh. Like, not a real dinosaur.
Cow. It's a cow. Veggie-saur, Lex. Veggie-saur. Apparently, that branch was actually of a gum tree which is highly poisonous and would have instantly fucking killed that animal or anything that ate it. And then the third thing, which actually, this is going to be really geeky, but I went into it a bit. The scene in the kitchen where the velociraptor breathes on the window,
yeah,
and you see the fog. Well, here's two things, because this is what I heard according to the Edumacation podcast, that the velociraptor would not have caused the fog because the dinosaurs were cold-blooded, and cold-blooded creatures produce their insides don't warm up, you know, their
it would have been the exhale. Same temperature.
It would have been room temperature, thus would not cause fog to accumulate on the window.
Not to make this a whole science thing, but I thought dinosaurs were more closely related to birds, thus making them warm-blooded.
Ah, that's my counterpoint. They said that the velociraptor was the size of a small dog. They also said that it was feathered, which means that if anything, it evolved into a bird. Thus, birds are warm-blooded. And so, it would make more sense that it could breathe the fog on there. It just couldn't reach the window.
However, if you go by Michael Crichton's science, they used amphibian DNA.
Which wouldn't have worked.
Which totally wouldn't work because they would have been completely different animals. And as soon as they started breaking down the dinosaur DNA, they would have discovered that, oh, wait, this is actually not compatible with an amphibian.
And if you go by Dr. John Hammond's science, the velociraptor would have stopped and drawn a heart in that condensation.
And if you went by Ken Ham.
Oh, God.
Nothing would have happened because dinosaurs don't exist.
Or someone would have ridden one.
Exactly.
It's a bad one.
Anyway, so as we geek out, as you guys...
But Jurassic Park is a really good book and you should read it.
Oh, yes, definitely.
It's excellent. Even the English version.
Sorry, those were the show notes.
There's a bridge version?
Yeah, there was like a kid's version that I read. It was like maybe 80 pages.
Oh, shit, no, man. You gotta read the real thing.
This one was like the movie adaptation and had pictures and shit.
I wouldn't be surprised if Michael Crichton wrote that one, too, because he wrote the book, he wrote the movie, and then he probably wrote the kids' version.
If I remember correctly, it actually came with a sticker of Timmy on the fence.
Three. So we had the Raleigh comic book show last Sunday, and actually both of you came out at different times.
Yeah, we didn't really coordinate that one.
No, but recorded a pod with Jacob Corum, which is now live on Oak City Hustle. So
check that out.
Check it out. It was kind of fun. We met some artists. I sold some prints. I even got commissioned to do a cover, and I even got my first fan email.
Nice.
Yeah, whoa. The next day, I was like, ooh, that's cool. Anyway, I don't know if he's listening right now. That'd be, I guess, fine. Anyway, I was fortunate enough to be set up next to Lawson Wallace, who is a local comic book illustrator who works on the Spirit Rocketeer comic, as well as he does licensed comics. And I believe he did some stuff for the very popular Batman animated series.
Batman Beyond?
Batman animated series.
But I looked him up on Google.
Oh, did he work on Beyond as well?
Well, I saw images of it. I wasn't sure if it was...
Well, let's go down the list. Critiqued blew us off. Eric Powell. I tweeted and nothing. Happen. Probably not going to happen.
Is it throw some money at him?
You know what? I that's fine.
I bet if we threw a six-pack at him, he might join us. Maybe an antique tool.
I think if we threw a six-pack at him, he'd be in the hospital. So maybe we could get up with Lawson and see if he would like to sit in. Also, Sandy Jarrell from the Batman 66 series. He's also working on his own creator-owned story for Oni Comics. He, believe it or not, ECU. Yeah, so we have a little in, and maybe we can go into detail with his experience versus ours. I think that'd be pretty cool.
Well, shit's been going crazy at work, so I didn't follow up with anyone. But yeah,
if we had Lawson Wallace on the show, I'd have to get over my.
You'd have to stop blushing and giggling.
Yeah,
and
I'd have to get over my newly required nerd fanboy persona.
Oh, that's he's blushing right now.
Yeah.
Well, I'd probably do the same thing if Eric Powell was on the show.
Oh my God, me too.
I made the mistake of I went to the Raleigh comic show probably about 15 minutes before it closed and went up to Adam's table, and he was sitting beside a guy I didn't recognize. But he had, you know, like 12 by 15 sheets of some penciled artwork sitting on the table. And while I was talking to Adam, the exact moment where he introduced me to Lost in Wallace, I was looking at his artwork trying to figure out what it was I actually recognized on the page. And then I realized that it was pages from A Rocketeer and the Spirit comic book. And I don't know if anybody outside of this room knows, but I am the hugest fan of The Rocketeer and Dave Stevens and the comic books and everything. But I had never read the Spirit version of it, or the series, the new series that's out now. So I immediately took a dump in my pants. I'm pretty sure it was obvious because I just kind of sat there with my mouth agape, just like stuttering, and yeah. So I need to get over that one.
It'll be fine.
Next topic.
Actually, you know what's funny, and unfortunately, it was the next day that you know, me and him and his lovely wife, we just gabbed the whole day and had a great time. Didn't actually think of the one question that I wish I had asked him, which was how Rocketeer, being, as far as I know, a Disney license, how that deals with IDW versus, I don't know, say Marvel, which is now owned by Disney, and, you know, the Spirit, which is not owned by Disney, and the cross, you know, genre kind of licensing of that. I would find that to be kind of interesting.
Yeah, I wonder if it's changed over since Dave Stevens died.
Possibly.
A couple years ago.
I guess we'll have to get in touch with him and see if he'd come on the show.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, but yeah, he's not the only great, amazing artist who pays tributes to, you know, figures of the past. We got some news. There's not, you know, I think there's pretty often a lot of art news, you know, that's very current and relatable. It doesn't have to be, you know, you don't have to take an art class to appreciate some kind of art current event. And that leads us to this week's roundtable discussion. Are you guys aware that our former
Commander-in-Chief,
obviously you are. How'd you know? our
I read the notes. I did some homework, you know.
Your good friend and mine, George W. Bush, now fancies himself a painter. He has been a whole lot less annoying in the last, like, six years.
Well, all right. Well, first off, he can relax.
Which is probably nice.
I mean, you achieve presidency, you do it, you manage to achieve it twice in his case, and then you're done. I mean, that's pretty much like, that's a crowning achievement right there. So then what do you do with the rest of your life? You relax, and Secret Service guys follow you around until you're dead.
You sit on your ranch in Texas, and you chief a big fat one every day.
Hell yeah.
So
and
have you
paint pictures of...
Well, they get hacked. They get hacked first.
Here we go. Okay, so to catch everybody up, former President George Bush has taken up the hobby of painting. What he is painting is the portraits of political leaders that left an impact with him.
That he encountered during his presidency.
Right. And what he does is he Googles their name and goes through the image search and finds the image that he feels best encompasses their personality.
Yeah.
And then he uses, is it acrylic? It looked like acrylic.
It says oil on board. Is it really? I read.
No way.
I read one description. One thing was oil on board for some of them.
You know what? You might be right. Yes, I want to say it is actually oil, but it, somehow he made oil look like acrylic.
Yeah, they're really flat. They're, as far as I can tell, like unvarnished. They look really cheap. The quality of the paint is really cheap.
Yeah, I would agree.
Well,
it's
very
pastel, neutralized, flat.
We'll say this: he is definitely a hobbyist.
Yeah, and with that being said, like
he did, however, just have a gallery opening.
He did in his presidential library.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wish I had my own library.
One day.
No, it's literally never going to happen. Like, I'm literally never going to get a library.
Not with an attitude like that.
I wouldn't want a library. Honestly, I'd want them
You
to,
just
like,
said you did. I thought about it
and I was like, no, you can't drink at a library. And that wouldn't represent me. Unless it was a library with a bar in the back.
Somebody's talking to him very loudly and he is going to follow that path.
What? The path of a library? Anyway, back to our topic of discussion.
So, I find it kind of interesting and kind of in some ways nice to see Bush, who was quite the war hawk, put down the pen and pick up the brush and do something kind of uncharacteristic of his, what he's known for. How do you guys feel about language? That? Yeah, he's not great with the English language, neither am I. What's your point?
Lassoing some war debt.
Okay.
So,
well, as I recall, like, he was not big on supporting the arts while president. I don't recall any kind of save the music program, save the arts program.
Well, he also had to deal with a constituency that is all about slashing the budget, you know, cutting out money wherever possible.
Right.
In order to feed the war machine that he sort of created, I guess.
I've never looked into it, but I also don't. I've never heard of the Republicans being very kind on the arts.
Right.
So.
Well, some arts.
Well, I feel like a lot of it for them, it's something that they feel is an erroneous expenditure on the part of the government.
I wouldn't say that. And that's
no, a huge generalization. No, I'm saying they look at it that way. I'm not saying I look at it that way.
No. Well, I'm saying, well, that's a really big generalization for Republicans. I think Republicans support the arts in their own ways. They may not necessarily donate money to the arts, but, you know, rich, wealthy Republicans are known for buying art.
Well, I mean, rich, wealthy people are known for buying art because it's a status symbol.
Right.
You go to their house and they're like, I acquired this piece. It doesn't matter what their party affiliation is. Mm-hmm. It's the fact that they have to maintain a standard. But that is not the point of our discussion.
That is not.
The point of our discussion, I'm going to wrangle this beast to its point.
You start talking about presidents, it immediately segues into people arguing about
politics. We're staying away from the politics here. What I actually enjoyed about this is that it started out with a supposed hack,
yes,
of these self-portraits of him in like a bathtub and a shower, and all you saw was like his feet and then like the drain.
Yeah.
And just the goofiest things. And then it became official on the late night show. Was it the late night with
Jay Leno?
Yeah. When he gave Jay Leno a portrait of himself. He gave Jay Leno a portrait of Jay Leno.
Right.
There's a sunset falling behind the profile of his mask.
Yes. Yes. And I actually, for me, I kind of enjoyed it because it was and he has, from what little I've read on the subject, he has admitted that he's not the most talented, you know, he's not claiming to be a talented artist by any means, but I appreciate that he acknowledges his hobby and takes such passion and pride enough to where it's partially a publicity stunt, but at the same time, he takes pride in that he's willing to share this stuff these pieces that he works on, which I think, I mean, I don't think it brings a bad light to the art world or hobbies or having a artistic pastime.
I think he was roped into showcasing his stuff. Like he did.
By Laura?
Who knows? It could have easily been his daughter, who's now working for NBC, supposedly. Mm-hmm. But I remember several years ago, he was in the news for these dog portraits that he was doing.
Right.
Like, he did a few of his dog Barney or some crap.
I think it was Barney.
I don't know that they were presidential dogs or anything. They were
right.
Dogs. And they were of the same quality of these portraits that are coming out now into light. But in all the interviews that I watched of him, he seemed really nervous talking about everything. And he said what Richard said, you know, he's not a famous artist. He's not pretending to be one. But the gallery exhibition that he had, or that was set up for him to showcase these national global leader portraits, that shit was quality. Like, that was a nice presentation, and
it was a nice presentation for something that someone views as a hobby.
It was funny. Yeah. There was actually I found
that's one of the perks of being a president, you know.
Well, I mean, he pretty much has his own gallery. I mean, it's his name's on the building. Mm-hmm. But one thing I thought was interesting is I found an article where they brought in an art critic, which, granted, I mean, you know, I'm not familiar with this particular critic, and I try not to be too familiar with any art critic. But I thought it was interesting how they actually brought in this guy to talk about it. And it was so funny because I was reading his review, this art critic's review, and he didn't say a damn thing that was mean. Like, it was so positive. But then I was curious. I was like, there's no way. So then I went and looked. I Googled this critic. And this guy has ripped a new one into plenty of people in the Texas, the Austin art scene, the Dallas, you know, because there's actually fairly large art community down there, surprisingly.
Yeah.
And
especially in Austin.
Yeah. And I feel like he was treading a little soft because this is a former president.
I will say this. Yes, you're probably right. But also, I think because he did not put himself up there to say, I'm an artist. There's all this metaphor in my work. There's all this psychology in my work. I am a master of my craft. He didn't say that. He's just like, this is what I've been doing. I've been really enjoying it, and I want to share what I've been doing with the public. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's... I think there's nothing to gain by ripping on his art. It's obviously very amateur and just kind of therapeutic form, and that's all personal. Well and good.
It's a recreational.
I kind of feel like I'm looking into a visual diary that he's now writing in retrospect. Because, I mean, especially the political leaders, what's actually so interesting is and this is something that the critic pointed out, and I noticed looking at the portraits, that the certain leaders that we get along with as a country tended to be painted in a better light than leaders that we didn't necessarily get along with. And
he chose different facial expressions.
Different facial expressions, different color palettes, just to kind of... And I don't know that he... You know, I mean, he's smart enough to get elected twice. So I can't really... I can't really deny his... Okay, he's smart enough to surround himself with the right people to get him elected twice.
There you go.
So I have to assume... I don't want to say that he's an idiot, but I think his subconscious was maybe working as far as how he selected.
So you're saying despite any attempt to be completely void of psychology or message,
I think that subconsciously it's going to show through? Yeah, I think it played a big part in the way he portrayed these. I mean, he did say that these were people that impacted him during his career as president. But he doesn't strike me as the type of person that has the sort of education to really put that much thought. I mean, for him, he Googles an image. He finds an image that works for him. He paints off. And you can tell. You can tell looking at the painting, it's very one-dimensional. He's working off one image off of Google.
There's very little attention to light and darkness value. There's really nothing going on in the backgrounds. They're usually painted with a solid color. They're flat. But they're almost like caricatures more than they are visual representations, you know.
Well, I almost think it's probably some of the better caricatures we'll ever get, because he actually had the ability to sit down in rooms with these people, shake their hand and talk to them,
whereas someone who works for the New Yorker has never actually met the person they're spoofing.
I got the impression that, okay, he's openly admitted and not admitted, but he's stated that he is purposely using images that are found within the first page of Google searching the names of these world leaders. And I got the impression that he's not very articulate, so I think he's using this as like some sort of tactful art mechanism.
Right.
As like a slight concept that he hasn't really, you know, he doesn't want to get too deep into.
Sure.
I think he's picking these particular photos because they're really close-up headshots. It's capturing some sort of aspect of their personality that he might feel is a true representation, as you said earlier in the discussion. And I think that's really the only thing he's after.
Yeah.
I get the impression that Hey, Tony Blair.
That was totally Tony Blair.
Photos of the
we'll post a couple of these photos, or at least a link to the page so you guys can follow along with us.
I think my favorite thing is on his Dalai Lama.
I like his Putin. Look at that.
He looks like some sort of skin beast.
He looks like fucking T-1000, man.
Yeah. That's because Putin is T-1. No, Putin is T-2000, man. He's going to straight up turn into liquid metal and kill your ass.
Yeah, right?
Now, I enjoy on his Dalai Lama where he clearly has done the background last. Uh-huh. And so it's got that nice white halo from where you don't want to color outside the lines.
Did you guys notice there were photos on one of the, I think it was on, unfortunately, the BuzzFeed website. But they had photos of the interior gallery. And did you notice what color the walls were?
Stark friggin' royal blue.
It was royal blue and then crimson red.
Yeah.
And yeah.
All of the like really nicely applied graphic vinyl text for every single thing. Even like the title was like 3 by 6 feet.
I have to say, I was scrolling through those images. I was looking at the blue and I was looking at the presentation and I sat there and thought, like, there was an interior designer who did this. Like, there was somebody paid top dollar
and
to come out.
They did a terrible job.
It looks like a little kid's bedroom.
God, I hate it.
Imagine, like, if you could pull up those images at home, listeners, imagine that. Being in a white space, like a typical gallery space, even with gray walls.
You'd probably take it too seriously.
No, those paintings on a white wall would look like shit.
Yeah.
They would look, you know, unworthy of the clean presentation space. I think the crimson red and the royal blue just adds a certain characteristic to these paintings that make them better. Which is not bad at all. Like, I actually kind of appreciate these paintings that he's been doing. They have a certain German expressionist quality to them, like with the stark backgrounds and the distortion of faces and the weird.
You gotta love the one of his dad.
I think
there's some like extra love in the dad.
I think what I really enjoy about it is this is probably one of the best. I think this is a really interesting way for a president to look back on his presidency.
Right.
And in a way that I think is actually going to reach more people. I think more people are gonna be more likely to look up who these portraits are of and figure out who these other world leaders are than if a president wrote a memoir.
Yeah, I was gonna say less people are gonna read his memoir.
I mean, he may not write it, but someone is going to write a memoir and he's gonna sign his name to it as a co-author, and I doubt very many people will read it, and I know I won't. But I have already looked at a majority of his paintings that have been made available, and out of curiosity, I have. I've been like, wait a minute, I don't recognize this person. And then I go do a little quick Google search, and I find out this person's politics, and I've already discovered in the 10 minutes I looked up his paintings during lunch today, you know, 15 different world leaders that I was not as familiar with.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, though, is I've heard this isn't even like a fraction.
Yeah.
I've heard he has hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of paintings that he's done in the last decade.
I kind of, though, feel bad for whoever his Secret Service people are.
Why?
Because they have to sit there over his shoulder and, like, watch him paint all day long.
Well, that's free education, man.
That's a paycheck.
Yeah, true.
I admire that he's doing these in such frequency. Like, it takes a lot of patience and dedication.
I wish I had the time.
Maybe he doesn't have anything better to do, but...
Well, I mean, they set up... I can't remember what... He set up with a stipend. I mean, obviously, the guy has... The family itself has its own wealth.
Sure.
The Bush family. Mm-hmm. But I think from what I understand, it's like when you... Once you're done with being the president, you're set up with a pretty decent stipend. You get your own personal security until you're dead. Although, I think they changed that with... Was it? I feel like they were going to change that. That he wasn't going to have Secret Service for the rest of his life.
I think it's 15 years.
Is it 15 years?
I can't remember.
No,
I think it stopped after Clinton.
Yeah, because we did have one younger president before that, but he didn't even make it out of the White House. But you know,
too soon, man. Jeez, he was out of the White House. Physically.
He was still president, all right?
He was out driving around.
So,
no more convertibles.
So how do we transition out? And one.
I don't remember. Yeah. Don't
so know. Aaron, I heard you got some spider facts. How about the spider facts? Oh my god.
Shit yeah.
Oh yeah. Oh doggy, we gonna get ourselves some spider facts. They don't just give them away.
My fucking eardrums.
Spider facts.
This time on Spider Facts, we're talking about Argaia Peurantia.
Oh, shit!
The writing spider.
No, it's Batman. What's the Spider-Man one?
Spider Facts!
That is totally going to be the new intro for the Spider Facts shit.
Top 10 material for the garbage can. So, Argaia Peurantia, otherwise known as the Riding Spider, is one of the most common spiders throughout North and Central America.
Also known as Charlotte?
Yes. The Riding Spider has a very distinctive yellow and black marking on the top part of their abdomen and a fuzzy white cephalothorax, otherwise referred to as their head. Interesting factoid is they are completely harmless to humans. They are incapable of biting you, though they look very imposing, often ranging from a quarter size to sometimes like 2.5 inches in diameter.
They're the spiders you normally see in your garden, right?
Yeah. Yeah, they're the ones that have the folklore behind them about...
Let it go. It's not Charlotte or her web, and there is no pig.
But they are terrific.
They are terrific.
Damn fine.
And when they have babies, the babies make little parachutes.
No.
And they fly. No?
Kind of.
What?
I don't know, dude. I just.
They're right. Not paratroopers, but they do kind of float on the wind.
This whole episode is dedicating to just ruining movies, isn't it?
No, just your life. Back to your cephalopodic.
Yeah, please continue destroying my childhood.
White fuzzy head.
Yes. They're harmless to humans. But they're freaking massive sometimes. They're really scary looking. They are very common, as we were saying. They often have a folklore stigma attached to them that if you speak a name to the spider, it will write the name in the web and that person will die some horrific...
What? I didn't know that.
Is that holy legend? Is that like a legend?
That is the urban legend, yeah.
That's awesome.
Mm.
What if it writes Aaron?
What they're actually referencing as writing or text in the spider's web is what's referred to as the stabilimentum, which is a zigzag shape of silk in the center of the web that it's very subject to debate. There's a lot of different theories as to like what its purpose is, but nobody has solidified what exactly it's used for. Some of those theories are that it serves as a camouflage or that it makes the spider appear even more visible or larger. Another is that it's such a non-organic shape that it causes larger animals that might potentially cause harm to the spider to steer clear of the web so that they won't, you know, injure the spider.
So let's break this down. The spider writes your name in its web.
Coming back to that.
And because what we learned from last Spider Facts is that spiders don't really run out of energy. So the shit writes its name, it's coming for your ass... And it's life size. How fucked are you?
So you're no. I think what Adam's saying is there's actually a spider god.
Oh God!
And it's this spider is the conduit to that spider god. And now the spider god has ninja spiders. They do not ever run out of energy, and they have their crazy green blood and their bookended lungs that never stop.
Right. Right.
See, we learn things. We listen, and we learn things. And we have now created an entire spider lore that needs to then get turned into a comic. Bam. Continue.
No, I'm done.
No, okay, you got more.
Dude, we're looking at the paper.
Right, that's clearly like 6 paragraphs that our audience is going to enjoy.
All I'm saying is that in this day and age, if it wanted to communicate to a spider god, it should get a damn cell phone. So
so many buttons. It would be great at texting.
Yeah, 8 legs.
Holy shit.
Dynamic texting.
I need a spider secretary.
I don't know, dude. I got 10 fingers and I suck at texting.
Your fingers are also like sausages. They're like bingo markers.
That they are.
I'm going to go cry in a corner now. Bingo!
So the other theory is that the stabilimentum... it's inherent in the name, stabilimentum, is that it stabilizes the web in some form or fashion. Wrong. The stabilimentum also supposedly reflects ultraviolet light, which, as you know, attracts bees and other insects. And the other less popular theories are that it serves a purpose of thermoregulation, whatever. It's a sign of stress, whatever. Or that it's a regulation of excess silk, whatever. Or that it's there for aesthetics. I highly doubt that. One interesting thing about this is significant and specific to this species.
So pay attention.
Yes.
I'm looking at your daughters.
To my knowledge, this is specific to the species, but they react to the presence of a human. Like, if you're standing really close to the web, sometimes they will read that as a disturbance and
write your name in the web and fucking kill you in your sleep.
Yes. They will register this as a disturbance and will begin to undulate the web back and forth. Supposedly this...
Undulate, for those of you viewers that are not sure what that means, it means vibrate.
Yes, it means to rock back and forth. If you ever encounter...
Dude, you're undulating the boat, man!
Whoa!
If you ever should encounter a riding spider, you should try it out. It's pretty fun.
Undulate with the spider?
Yeah, it's pretty freaky to see.
It's like dancing with it.
Yeah, it brings its legs in and then pushes them back out and causes the web to, like, shake back and forth.
It's a death dance right before it fucking murders you in your sleep.
Right before it takes the time to write something before it kills you.
Yes. Hey, man, that makes it even more sociopathic.
Like serial killer.
Yeah, because it's like, I mean, like we a spree killer, man, would just straight up, like, oh, you're in my space. Ka-ka! But, like, this is like a straight up, I'm going to think about it. I'm going to write your name. And with every strand of silk I lay down in my weird spider language.
No, you know what it is.
I think about
your death. If you don't dance with it, that's when it comes after you. So if you see a writing spider.
It's inviting you to dance.
It wants you to dance.
Because if your friends don't dance and then they don't dance.
Then the spider's going to fucking kill you. So supposedly the purpose of this undulation is that it causes the spider to be more visible, which would deter any predator from running into the web or eating it or whatever. If this disturbance continues to occur, the spider, instead of attacking the individual, will drop to the ground and run the fuck away.
Well, it can't attack. You just said it couldn't bite.
True.
So therefore, there would be no point in attacking.
Well, it's not just with humans. I mean, like, any slightly larger...
Oh, they'll just dance with anybody, huh?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sluts.
Basically, what you're telling me is this is a calligrapher gone club wild. Like, that is what this spider is. And I picture it as like kind of that cute, nerdy bookie girl, you know, just hanging out at the library. And finally, her friends are like...
Wait, it's nothing but black. She's got little blonde hair, little fuzzy white hair.
Okay, I wasn't like building a fantasy or anything. What? I'm just saying, it's kind of like this little bookie nerdy spider, you know, hanging out in the library. Finally, her friends are like,
it's Friday night.
Come on out. Come play. And it just starts dancing. But then that one dude just doesn't dance with her, pisses her off. And she goes straight carry on his ass.
He will try for that. I'm going to write his name and then I'm going to kill him.
And she's going to write that name over and over and over and over and cover the freaking walls.
And it's always Zach.
She's going to fill up one of those notebooks that has like the weird static.
Yes.
Pattern on the cover.
The composition notebook. The Mead compositions.
Yes, Mead.
Basically what every serial killer uses, because we've all seen the movie Seven.
They don't go out and just buy a regular sketchbook.
No.
The Mead composition.
No. I'm going to go buy Catcher in the Rye and 15 Mead composition sketchbooks. I'm going to read the book and then I'm going to write about it in every little book.
And what's her name? Charlotte.
Nice. That was nice.
You like that? There we go.
So something we could possibly say for another episode is the folklore behind the writing spider. It's kind of interesting.
Did we not just cover that?
No.
What?
No, we technically... I think we just created our own...
Folklore?
Fantasy, really. It's not...
It's interesting, but not art-related.
Yeah.
Shoot me an email if you're interested. Next topic!
I think that brings us to our
next topic.
What's the next topic? You got the list there.
It's the tale of the art school.
I thought we were saying
that
next week.
No, that got bumped, dude, to the next week. Hence the arrows that you drew on your own paper.
Man, you know what?
Dude!
No, I think that actually brings us... does that actually, like... I think that wraps us.
About wraps it up.
Wraps up the way a spider wraps you up when you're fucking sleeping and murders you.
Because it never tires.
Never.
Never.
Hide your children. Hide your wife. Because...
Time travel's a bitch.
The next one will be better.